Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 19 edition of Commodity Week. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thanks for joining us on today's edition of Commodity Week. Our guests today include Elaine Cubb. She's of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. We're joined also by Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. It's been a pretty blasé week from my perspective. Does anybody have anything that just really jumped out at them this week?
Export sales today. Okay, I think that really jumped out. You know, China canceled 37,200 metric tons of beans today on the new exports. Canada canceled. We saw China cancel. We saw Unknown cancel big time on corn, with China purchasing just a little bit. And we also saw cancellations in wheat, so you know you've got to wonder if the dollar is beginning to impact that. I think the other thing we need to address is pork imports. They're talking about coming into the U.S. could be up 25% this year. And what about corn and meal?
Hey, Jackiella.
What's that?
Elaine Cobb.
I was going to put a slightly bearish touch on your export sales comments. Is that sorghum had another big week, like 181,000. So that's hedged against corn. So, I mean, I guess it suffers the same headwinds from the dollar as everything else, but there was one little piece of bullishness for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no question about that. Sorghum had a good week, and sorghum's had phenomenal weeks. It's been, you know, one of the things about sorghum that they keep saying about China is the fact that, you know, no GMO. You know, there's no, you know, there's it's pure is what they say.
Why don't you, Jackie, start, I know with the exports, and the cancellations. I want to start with the pork imports. Why do you suppose that's taking place?
Well, I think it's primarily based on the dollar. You know, and we've seen this in the past when the dollar has strengthened, they begin to look other places. You know, to be able to bring market worthy hogs into the U.S. and it can happen, especially out of Canada. There's no question, and it's very concerning to me because, from a corn standpoint, it's not so concerning because of the fact that we know that they're expanding. You know, we've got a lot of guys who are going to be putting pork onto the market here, especially starting in June. Some of the expansions should really hit the market in June. But it's very concerning when you look at the fact that we've dropped as much as we have. And, you know, June pork today was at around $74, and, you know, April's at $57. We got to talk about profitability is the key. And, you know, switching to other products away from corn always becomes a reality when profitability becomes difficult.
Hmm. Now, come up back to the cancellations. And when you said something about that in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, they cancel, but oftentimes they cancel because they can find another source or a cheaper place to make the purchase. And that may not mean that it's coming from a different nation. Are you of a mind that this is cancellations where they've just decided that it's just too expensive, or will they replace those cancellations with new purchases?
Oh, no. No, I think what it is I think it's that they're canceling because the beans they bought were too expensive, and they're going to come back in. Unknown bought today on beans, and they're going to come back in underneath some other name and buy them back is what they're going to do. You know, the big thing, Todd, is when you look at China. China has not experienced the increase in prices due to the rise in the dollar that we've seen, you know, with any of the other countries that allow their currency to float, and so. You know, it's a circumstance where, you know, China can come in here, they can buy from us, they can turn around and sell it to somebody else if they want to, because they'll still be able to undercut where we are, or they can shift it to someone else. And I think that's been one of the things that supported us in the marketplace, is if you've been watching this, you've seen sales from unknown being shifted to other countries. And I think that that's probably China at work. They're pretty smart guys in what they do. But I thought the thing that was interesting was that you know, in general, you looked at, you know, the wheat situation, the corn situation. We are starting to see cancellations. There's just no two ways about it. And wheat being the most sensitive, you know, because wheat is definitely, the U.S. dollar reigns supreme when it comes to wheat. We just are not, we're too far away, you know, from the market that really demands wheat. And so we've really got to be competitive on the dollar to be able to get those sales.
Yeah, so you view it as bearish?
I do. When I see this happening, yes. And, you know, I'm not surprised on China. You know, China normally front loads their exports anyway.
Don't you think, though, that along the way that these could be just some that were optional origin, and because it was the high dollar and they can go down to Brazil now and buy cheaper and load out a little cheaper at this point in time? You know, we used to see an awful lot of this being done. The last 2 years we've seen very, very minimal amount of it being done, and actually, you know, even coming back in and buying some more beans this week from U.S. origin. So I'm thinking that maybe the shipping companies or whatever switch some of that down there, and it isn't quite as bearish as it sounds, because we really haven't seen very big or large cancellations happen yet like we did a couple, 3 years ago.
Well, no, and, you know, part of that, Wayne, is because of the shipping companies have changed their rules. I mean, they used to allow them to book a ship and not have to pay. Now they have to pay 50% of the freight up front. And so, you know, when they can't really cancel, they have to just shift it to somewhere else is what they've got to do. I mean, it can show up as a cancellation, but it'll show up somewhere else because they've already got 50% of the freight invested.
The thing that did interest me this week, and not necessarily the weekly overall export sales progress, but in particular that announcement earlier this week that China was buying corn, it overreacted to that. But I'd be curious if everybody else shares that opinion. You know, that it's really not changing the overall global supply and demand of feed grains.
Okay. Did you say buying corn out of Russia? You blipped out on my...
Ukraine.
Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I think that's... Isn't that part of a... and also a loan agreement program, and it's something that was put together ahead of time. We're trading oil and pricing and doing along with it along the way. I thought that there was something else that went along with that of why they were doing it, just sort of like why Egypt bought wheat from us when we were way higher because of the way the loan was set up to do it. So I'm not surprised, and I think that was just a little bit of shun on the U.S. and our corn market and throwing a little jab back at the GMO part.
Yeah,
sure, but to see prices come down double digits after that, I really thought that was an overreaction, and I think that the corn market did recover somewhat, but I'm not much of a technical trader. I don't really pay too much attention to these technical areas of support or resistance. But I wonder if seeing the nearby corn under 370 there, if that didn't do some lasting damage and maybe put more of a bearish trend on the overall market here, just from a really, in my opinion, arbitrary reason.
Well, I think whenever you break through support points or resistance points, it does put a cloud on things for a while, even if the news turns out to be wrong. You know, we've seen things break before, and once they break through those levels, it's just hard climbing back up there, you know, once the support's broken down. I mean, it's just like right now, we're hanging, when we broke below the $4 with the Dease corn, it was a lot more bearish, you know, yeah, intended than what it really was. If we'd moved that same penny amount from 420 down to say 411, it wouldn't have had the same effect on the feeling on things and people. So yes, it probably was an overreaction that did put us in a little bit of a bearish mode, and probably had some of the funds actually build a little bigger short position than they would have if it hadn't come out the way these algorithms are set up now.
Kurt Kennel, you've been pretty quiet.
Well, you guys are doing a good job. back on the pork issue, I think it's more weakness. Well, you can call it dollar, but the Canadian guys are moving hogs across the border. The loonies just been a free fall in here, and it's advantageous to move hogs into the U.S. Then you're looking at a situation too, you're just, you know, looking at production being up. So the pork complex has its work cut out for it. But no, you made some good points on the weekly export sales report, especially sorghum. Sorghum's doubled what it is a year ago. Bean cancellations, that's routine. I didn't see where there was a huge aisle. I thought they shipped 30,000 tons around, which isn't just a drop in the bucket, but we're going to continue to see the southern hemisphere come in and dominate from here on out. But from here on out, I think we're just going to consolidate and wait for the numbers at the end of the month. That's probably going to be the big market maker to give us some direction here as we move forward.
Speaking of that, there were some numbers, Kurt, I think, that came out earlier in the week. What did you make of those numbers and your expectations for the end of the month prospective plantings report?
Well, the trade estimates are out there. We'll see where they fall, but we believe the bean number is going to be a little higher and the corn number is going to be a little lower. When you look at the yield you put on, that's the next question. A lot of the trades trying to argue you can't have back-to-back record yield numbers. So even if you do back yield off and apply it to these numbers, we're still going to have ample supplies of beans, not only here in the U.S., but worldwide. And the corn supply-demand balance is going to tighten it up. So we'll see what the numbers are and go from there.
Hey, Elaine, can you tell me about conditions on the ground in the western Corn Belt at this time? We've heard about dry conditions, and I don't know that it really means a whole lot at this time of year. A few rainfalls in spring really make up for things pretty quickly, at least here in our part of the world. Are farmers there worried?
Oh, well, I can confirm that it is dry in the western Corn Belt, and you can take a look at the drought monitor, and it shows that too. I mean, the only places where there's real official drought is down in the southern plains, where you're going to have potential effects on the winter wheat yields, but we've been seeing that for years, and obviously the world can pick up the slack for any shortage of U.S. wheat. But as far as getting corn and soybeans planted, the dry weather is fine for planting weather. But yeah, there is significant concern that the dry weather would continue. I've seen pretty reliable yield estimates for corn as low as 161 bushels per acre nationwide, and that's due to this dryness in the western Corn Belt. But it's been interesting to me as far as planting intentions go. It's been interesting to me to note how the seed sales or just the word on the street or in the coffee shops from farmers are really leaning towards soybeans. And I think less from a price standpoint and more from just a behavioral standpoint or a concern about the dry weather or concern about input costs, not wanting to risk, putting corn into a year like this and just going to soybeans for behavioral reasons more than price. The price ratio is 2.37 to 1. Statistically speaking, soybeans are underpriced at that kind of price ratio, not by much, but it's interesting to watch that and see how soybeans are being favored coming up into this planting intentions battle, basically just because of this dryness.
But it's interesting that you say that, because I just talked to a number of my big guys out in Nebraska today, and they said the anhydrous rigs are running like absolutely wild for corn. Another fellow that I talked with in Iowa, he said that their corn sales are up 20% to 30% in the last 2 weeks. And so in the 18 years I'm doing this, I've never seen or never heard across the U.S. as many acres that didn't have anything done to them last fall as I did this year. In other words, they're just waiting for farmers to decide whether they're going to have enough money for inputs. I think money for inputs is probably going to be the bigger deciding factor from when it comes to planting beans versus corn, and whether they're going to get the money that they need. One thing that I can tell you over the years, too, is that, the Western Corn Belt, be it for whatever it is, the trade doesn't pay much attention to it because of all the irrigation. They tend to always negate anything that's there unless it turns out that it's in Iowa someplace, which is, it's a real possibility. I've heard that it's going to be dry west of Mississippi, which would include Iowa. But I don't think we're going to see more acres on this report because they surveyed already at the beginning of March. Who knew for sure what they were going to do then?
The three-month forecast came out, and it shows April, May, June, above normal temperatures and below normal precips. So I guess you can cut out the 1.3 billion bushels of corn production in Minnesota.
Right. So are we really just in a wait-and-see mode until the end of the month? And, of course, the other really big report at that point, Wayne, is the grain stocks numbers.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. We, pushed the feed usage up in the first report here. We're going to see what we have left to do, because that's going to give us what we should be figuring forward to for our carryout numbers to be what we'll be adding to with this crop we're planting, and to see whether it's going to be any tightness at all. We think there's going to be adequate supplies of everything. We're not going to run into anything like we had last September, when we were out of beans and paying $3 over and everything like that. I think that that's one other thing. The pipeline is not going to get empty at any point in time going into the next harvest here, and that's going to take away a lot of the volatility and activity. Unfortunately, we're getting down pretty much to it's going to take weather reaction and planting. I mean, and of course, that's going to be more associated with, you know, the size of the crop to begin with and how much can affect it. If we're on the low end of the plantings, if sorghum really comes in and takes over, a lot of the acres they think will be switching to beans that don't go to beans. If we do cut corn acres, put sorghum on it, if we do have some places down south that don't plant corn because of lateness, then that could tighten that up and we could see a little pop in the corn. But all in all, right now, it looks like plenty for quite a while out there.
Hey, can I ask each of you, your larger farmers that are 5,000 acres and more, would they by March 1st have made all their decisions? Would they, when they were asked by USDA, and all of them would have been asked, not a sample of them, but I think all of them. I'm not sure whether that's all across the nation, but certainly in Illinois it would be the case. So I'm guessing that would be across most of the Corn Belt, would have been censused rather than surveyed. So would they have by that time made their decisions, do you suppose? Does anybody think that, that those producers would not have already made their decisions?
Within 5%, Todd. I think if all of them that large would have, you know, a field here or there that could go either way depending on how the ground was working when they got to it. But I would say that most of my large producers, they told me when they signed up for crop insurance, we're going to be two-thirds beans, one-third corn this year, half and half, or 60-40 or whatever it is, basically they've come down to that sort of decision at that point in time. There's very few of them are going to be changing much that I deal with.
Anybody else?
I'd say the same thing. In fact, I was going to say 5%, Wayne, because that's what the majority of them said. And you know, the big guys, the majority have said, I'm not really changing from where I was. In most cases, you know, it's if I'm 50-50, I'm staying 50-50. If, you know, there's a lot of things that go on with making big changes, too, when it comes to logistics and everything else. They learned that back when so many people went so heavy corn and lightened up on beans. It isn't all a picnic. So your biggest guys have all of those time constraints involved, too. So I would say the majority of them are within the 5%, just like Wayne said.
I would agree that folks have a plan in place, subject to change based on planting weather. But if, you know, as we talked about, there would be a nice, dry, open spring for getting things planted into the dust, even as the case may be, but planted, I don't think we're going to see very many changes to those intentions.
Does it tell us anything about what the prospective plantings will look like in that case? Can you judge by what the producers, the largest producers are doing, what the rest of the farmers in the Midwest might follow through with?
No, and I say that because it's not the Midwest states that are the I states aren't the ones that fluctuate much. Your fluctuation is going to become in your border states for the plus or minus acreage. Where did we add all the corn acres in the past? Where did we add the bean acres and things like that? And so I don't have a good feel for what North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, far western Iowa and like that is going to do, because those are the ones that are on the bubble as to whether they'd switch. How much sorghum seed is available for all those guys to plant?
Anybody else have a thought?
I was just going to say, I did some looking into that this week for my column for DTN, looking at the specialty crops, the minor specialty crops, and if their prices kind of move with the benchmark crops, and they generally do. So we've seen corn and soybeans and wheat all fall, you know, more than 50% off of the 2012 highs. And it turns out the specialty crops, your soy or your sunflowers, canola, things like that, also fall, not to the same degree, not as much co-integrated, but basically your motivations are still going to be the same. So I don't think we're going to have a major change in the distribution of corn, soybean acres versus something else acres. But I think that sorghum is the big key point here. And I don't know about the intentions there or the seed availability, but that would be the one to watch.
Do you really suppose that there would be enough?
That's going to be for southern states.
Sorghum for southern states?
Right. I mean, that's where the majority of my guys that raise it are going to be raising it, you know, heavy in Texas, places like that. It's all priced off of corn. So if corn comes down, sorghum prices come down also. And so, you know, I don't know about the seed availability.
There is none.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I really didn't know. So
wondering. That's I've checked with like a lot of dealers that can call the Monsanto people, the Pioneer people. That they just call their district guys, their state guys, and they just said there is none. Yeah. Guys in Arkansas, I said, "Well, you're going to plant a few more acres of Milo now," and he says, "Well, I would if I could, but I can't."
And what will he put in the ground instead? Corn.
Probably going to pick back up a few cotton acres.
Interesting. Neither corn nor soybean. Well, it should be interesting to watch the March 31 prospective plantings report release, the grain stocks numbers as well. What's your final and best set of advice for producers between now and the end of the month? The only real thing left they have yet to do is to make the ARC and PLC decision, and I suspect most of them have made that, but they can still change their mind. Maybe we should start with you, Kurt Kimmel.
Well, we continue to use the approach of price risk management. I know we're looking at the long-term charts, and we're trying to play this last dollar down in the corn and the last 50 cents down the bean. So we'll continue to use the price floor approach. That way, if everything is favorable, prices move lower, we've got some additional downside pressure. But if the farmer's almanac kicks in, like was mentioned over the beef house there last week, then you've got some flexibility. But flexibility is probably the main theme you need to continue to look at.
Elaine Cub?
I think there may be some lingering attitudes out there for, speaking of old crop sales, lingering attitudes that we might, see another summer high like we've been seeing in the previous years when there were shortages. And I think that that's playing out when you see a pretty strong basis throughout the country right now, even in March, because folks haven't been selling old crop as heavily as they should. And I think I would encourage folks to think about that a little more, that we really do have excellent supplies of grain in this country, and there's no real reason to expect there to be a big summer rally yet. So keep looking at making old crop sales when you get any sort of a bounce.
Jackie Bakes.
Well, I agree with Elaine 100%. In fact, that's right where I was going to go, because that's all I've been hearing is better basis, so take advantage of it. You can always re-own if you want to, if something changes in the weather pattern. But I think that we're all, I'm on the same page. Be cautious is what you do. And there's, look into short-dated options if you're concerned about new crop corn and new crop beans. There's all kinds of alternatives that you can use to at least give yourself some type of protection, because none of us know how this is going to play out in the long term.
And Dwayne Nelson.
Well, if you're up to the level you're comfortable with here, it's time to sit back and wait and see if we do have these weather scares, see if we do have some pleasant surprises with the government reports. If you're not up to those levels, I think that we need to buy a put and sell some calls above the market at the rally place where you would you be willing to sell at along the way. So, that's what we're going to do. If you feel you need to add something onto it, if you're up to that 40% sold or so, we're going to sit back and see one or two weather scares come along. But if you aren't, core those bins and make sure the corn is keeping well.
Hey, thank you all for taking the time this afternoon. I really do appreciate it. While you were all talking, I lost a dog and I gained a dog at the same time. I think that's true. Did I? Yeah, I did. I lost one and I gained one. Somebody came to the door.
Are you in trouble with the owner of the one you lost?
No, they came and got one and somebody else dropped one off. So I got rid of a golden doodle. Retriever.
Neat.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. I've got another one here. I've got two others here already. Well, I've got a Labrador doodle and a golden doodle. And then I picked up the one you just heard. I don't know whether you heard him or not. Toby arrived. Toby's a little bitty one. And he was pretty excited.
Hey, he had to talk.
Well, yeah, no, that was actually Tex. That was
the
one from across the street.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.